easy to love winning. Great competitors learn to love the process. They learn to extend themselves and to find great fulfillment in the fact that they gave their best, put themselves on the line, and moved closer to the control that they are seeking within themselves. Mastery of myself, this battle of me against myself, these are not just competitive skills in sport. These are life skills.
Virtual Media Sports presents Love the Battle, Pathways to Performing Your Best Under Competitive Pressure with Dr. James E. Lehr. This program presents Dr. Lehr's latest insights and discoveries on how you can achieve your highest level of performance under the stress and pressure of competition. Dr. Lehr is recognized internationally as one of the leading experts on mental toughness and possesses both doctorate and master's degrees in psychology. He currently serves as president of LGE Saddlebrook Sports Science Incorporated in Tampa, Florida. Dr. Lehr has worked with literally hundreds of world-class athletes over many years. His past client list reads like a who's who of professional sports. From tennis stars Jim Courier, Monica Seles, Martina Navratilova, Gabriella Sabatini, Sergey Bruguera, and Mary Jo Fernandez, to boxer Ray Mancini, speed skater Dan Jansen, and many, many others. Love the Battle, Part 1.
I'm Dr. Jim Lehr. This information has been prepared to help you achieve your fullest potential as a competitor. It contains what I believe are the most important understandings in technology from my nearly 20 years of work with high-level performers. Perhaps the most important statement I could make in the context of competition is that emotion runs the show. For a long time in my career, I thought that the key to actualizing talent and skill in the context of pressure was mental, that something that we would think or visualize would have an impact on whether or not we could come to terms with the fullest measure of our talent and skill. And that was true. I fully understood how important the mental was, but I wasn't sure exactly how it all connected. As my career evolved, I began to realize that the real center stage phenomenon was really not mental, but it was emotional. The reason that mental is important, the reason that we become very disciplined in how we're thinking and how we're visualizing, is its impact on emotion. The more I began to study the evolution of this emotional concept, the more I began to realize that what we've really got to do as athletes is to mobilize the emotions which empower us, which bring to life our talent and skill, and whatever we can do to make that happen, be it physical or be it mental, we must do that. We know, for instance, that how we're feeling emotionally affects our thinking. It affects the images we carry in our head. We also know that the way in which we think and what we are visualizing and the images we're carrying at any particular time affect what we're experiencing emotionally. It works both ways. We know, for instance, that if you become fatigued, if you're not physically fit enough, if you are literally running out of gas physically, your muscles run out of glycogen, suddenly you can't fight the battles anymore. When you become fatigued, you, in a sense, are forced into submission. The emotions that empower you are gone. When you don't properly sleep, when you don't properly intake food and water, the effects are dramatic in terms of your motivation, your sense of passion, your sense of eagerness. So we look at this as a continuum, perhaps, that there are a wide diversity of things, some mental, some physical, that affect emotion. And the reason that emotions are so important in the context of competition is because they simply reflect what's happening at a very deep physiological basis within the person. I came to understand a very important concept in my development of this notion of peak performance and the whole concept of being the very best that you can be. And that was the idea of the ideal performance state. Perhaps the single most important understanding that I came to in the early part of my career, the most important discovery, was that the same feelings and emotions are present when athletes perform at their best, be it baseball, basketball, football, tennis, whatever, that when we access our talent and skill, it invariably occurs within a very specific, very unique feeling climate. And that those feelings and emotions simply reflect a very delicate balance of physiological harmony, wherein talent and potential become fulfilled. And therein lies the understanding that's so critical in terms of the role emotion plays. Feelings and emotions are simply body talk. They represent the internal eyes and ears of the body. Feelings and emotions are analogous to kind of the instrument gauges on a high-performance race car. They simply reflect what's going on at a much deeper level. And the body's always talking. Feelings and emotions are always surfacing in one form or another. And deeply felt emotions have a real physiological biochemical basis. Fear, anger, joy, challenge, disgust have their own unique physiological and biochemical profile. The most exciting information that's occurring today in the context of unlocking this mystery between the mind and the body, I believe, is in the context of emotions. Emotions are really the result of millions of tiny messenger molecules that are stimulating receptors on the surface of all the cells in our body, whether they be neurons, nerve cells, or muscle cells, and even immune cells. Every cell in our body contains millions of receptors, like satellite dishes pointed outward, ready to receive critical information that is necessary, that is really communicated via these feelings and emotions. A messenger molecule, for instance, that's released in the brain that's associated with positive emotion and joy is called endorphin. And we know there are over 200 varieties of that single chemical by itself. It's found in nearly every system of the body, including the immune system and the endocrine system. Most messenger molecules, as well as endorphins, are called peptides. In the brain, they're called neuropeptides. And these, in a sense, represent the biochemical units, we believe, of emotion. But the most important thing is that emotions have a real connection to the physiology of the body. And there is a peak emotional state that empowers the body, that brings to life one's talent and skill. And if we can summon those emotions, if we can summon those feelings in the context of competition, that's when we achieve greatness. Emotion occurs in response to the way we perceive an event. It's also influenced by our past learning. It's also influenced by our current emotional state. In other words, the way we are feeling right now powerfully influences the way we see things. We have to understand how to control emotion. We've got to figure out what are the things that connect to emotion. We know, for instance, that the way you think about an event, a bad line call, the way you think about an opponent, the way you think about winning and losing is going to affect the kind of emotional climate, the feelings that surface, and the chemistry that lies behind those feelings is being activated in a very specific way precisely because you're thinking about something in a specific way. We've got to become very disciplined and really understand how important it is to think and to visualize with great discipline when it comes to competition, because we, in a sense, really are moving our chemistry when we do so. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the emotional state that empowers us, this ideal performance state, because this is really the basis of becoming a super achiever in anything in life, be it in sport, in business, being able to take exams in school. If you can create this wonderful state of physiological harmony that we access and summon through mobilizing specific emotions and feelings within ourselves, we have control. That's what makes a peak performer. Now, what are those feelings? Those feelings, first of all, in that ideal performance state, you feel very relaxed in your muscles. And all that does is reflect a physiological state of arousal in the muscles. There's a very low level of arousal, so to speak. You're very loose. There's a profound sense of calmness. That you're, even though you're in the center of a hurricane, things are going wild, things are crazy, all kinds of stuff happening, you have a real sense of calmness that you are You're able to handle what's happening. It's almost like time slows down. This we know is related to a particular frequency of brain oscillation called EEG, electroencephalographic activity. And when you get the right arousal sequence going, when the right emotions are mobilized, you will get this profound sense of calmness. You need to recognize the calmness that's associated with your best performances. There's a sense of almost no pressure, even though it's the most pressurized time in a match. When you've got it wired right, you don't have the sense of pressure or of nerves. You have the sense of almost freedom from that feeling. You have a tremendous sense of challenge, almost like you love being there. Fear, the word we use is choking, completely short circuits this whatever talents and whatever skill you have. And that's why athletes are so reluctant to even talk about choking, because it robs you of your talent and skill. And it's an emotional response. All those little receptor sites are picking up the hormones, the peptides associated with the fear response. And the particular chemical that is apparently the most detrimental is what we call cortisol. And as those cortisol levels escalate in an exaggerated way, feelings of dread, feelings of just uncomfortableness, muscles get tight, it causes a whole host of other messengers to be sent to mobilize the body to flee, to run away. And we can't do that in sport. We got to fight. We got to get out there and stay relaxed and calm and loving what we're doing. That means you got to think about what's happening to you in a very special way. You cannot be threatened. You got to think about it in the context of, I want to be here. I need the situation. I hate pushers, but I need to play the push. I need to go out there in the context of competition, and whatever you throw at me, I can handle. And in fact, I love it. Is this great stress or what? You perform best when you feel a tremendous sense of energy, when you're mobilized with energy, when the life just comes to the surface. You don't feel flat, you don't feel dead, and that reflects a wonderful balance physiologically and biochemically in the body. When you have energy, particularly this positive form of energy, it's a very healthy sign. It's a sign the body is in a very good state of balance. There's an overwhelming sense of optimism and positivism. We're learning that negative and positive emotions have very much their own kind of characteristics. And in almost every case, when an athlete maxes out, it comes in the context of a positive emotional climate. And positive emotions, what they represent basically is a state of balance. Negative emotions serve a purpose. They're like the instrument gauges on a race car that suggest that the fuel is low, you know, that sometimes when you're hungry, you're agitated, you're overstressed, all kinds of things. Positive emotion simply reflects a pretty healthy, very normal state of operation internally, that there aren't any great needs that are being expressed. And that's a very important understanding, that negative emotions serve a very real purpose, but we have to learn to put aside negative emotion in the context of competition and to summon the chemistry that will bring to life our emotions and then later take care of the needs that those reflect. In a sense, as we're going to see as we go through this ideal performance state, we have to be wonderful actors and actresses, very much like the actors and actresses have to summon their chemistry on stage to make something that's artificial and phony become real so that they really make it believable on stage. There's a sense of great fun and enjoyment in the context of competing at your best, because there's a unique chemistry to fun. When you're having fun, you're relaxed, you're focused, everything is like flowing inside you. Fun has its own unique biochemical, physiological basis. There's a sense of effortlessness. It's like your mind and your body are working so wonderfully together that it's like it's easy, even though you're working so hard and you're pushing yourself to the max. There's also a sense of spontaneity. It's almost like you don't have to think it through. You're not forcing the performance. It's like coming from deep within you. It's like you're just kind of very spontaneous when you play. This, again, reflects a very special state of neurological balance of the right and left hemispheres. There's a much more right brain kind of dominance as opposed to being very analytical and very linear, talking a lot in terms of thinking it through in verbal language. This comes much more from a sense of feel, from the creative side of you. And this reflects a sense of trust. A letting go, a letting happen what will happen, and just kind of knowing that it's all deep inside you. again, reflecting a neurological kind of balancing, special kind of arousal. There's a sense of confidence. Confidence is perhaps the single most powerful emotion that we can talk about. Because in that chemistry of confidence, in that one emotion, brings the protection from nerves, brings a wonderful sense of I can to any arena, and causes you to be aggressive, causes you to take the ball forward and not to play it safe and not to play not to lose. But it's like, I can do this, and it frees you. The muscles remain more relaxed. You're in the context of what you feel you can handle. And so we have to figure out how to get this feeling of confidence to surface, because confidence is a tremendously empowering emotion. Disempowering emotions are everywhere. The feeling of hopelessness and helplessness and the feeling of low energy and the feeling of I just can't, of disgust and of anger and self-defeatism and so forth. Those emotions are just waiting out there to grab you. And there is a chemistry and a physiology that reflects all of that kind of emoting. And we have to figure out ways to control that. The last one, you feel very much in control of yourself, most importantly, emotionally. If you go through those, you begin to realize that emotions connected to all of them. Feelings are simply, and emotions are simply reflecting a very, very unique emotional response in competition. That's what the ideal performance state really is. And that doesn't happen just by jumping out of bed. It's something we've got to work at and understand how thinking and visualizing and how the way in which we carry our bodies, how we walk, how we carry our head and shoulders, how moving the facial muscles can in a real sense stimulate or block the reaching out and grabbing those emotions so that we can use them in the context of battle. When you take a look at the whole constellation of feelings and emotions that are represented in this ideal performance state, you begin to realize it is a very unique emotional response in the context of competition. And this is the response that we're trying to summon when we face adversity and crisis, when there are all kinds of things that are being thrown at us, our forehands or backhands suddenly evaporate, we get cheated, we suddenly end up playing far below our potential, when we make big mistakes here and there, people in the crowd make some comment that just infuriates us, suddenly we have to bring ourselves right back to this very, very special state of emotion which stimulates being able to trigger this very unique emotional response. When things are going badly, when the world turns against us, when there's so much on the line, this is what takes a really great performer. This is where the skill is brought to the forefront. We have so much that we've put into our practicing and all of the logging of hours and hours. We get into competition, we have expectations, we want to do well, we want to do the very, very best that we possibly can. And suddenly we find ourselves against all kinds of odds, things are not working. And for us at that point to be able to continue to summon the kind of emotions which will eventually break us free, that struggle is perhaps the greatest struggle in competitive sport. That is the greatest battle. If we can handle the emotions, what we're really saying is we're dealing with this remarkable physiology of ours in a wonderfully sensitive way, that we're beginning to understand how feelings and emotions are simply windows to understanding our physiology. And that, yeah, an outside event can cause us to be angry, we can understand that, but we also can think in ways, we can act in ways, which will cause that anger to dissipate, to go away, or perhaps to never actually trigger that feeling of anger in response to a mistake, so that we more consistently keep the emotional balance, the physiological balance, that will ultimately give us our dreams in sport, to perform to the very best of whatever we're capable of doing. I was struck when I began to realize that what professional and amateur competitors in tennis and other sports really are, in the fullest sense, they are professional actors and actresses. There's really no difference between what a Julia Roberts or Jack Nicholson or any really great actor in Hollywood or actress is able to do. What they do are able to summon deeply from within themselves, what might have started as an artificial emotion. They bring it to the surface and make it real. And in so doing, they bring to life the script. And their script may call for emotions that are a million miles from where they really feel. They may not feel excitement or passion or joy, but they are a professional, and they have learned to recruit within themselves the resources that are necessary to make those emotions become real. We know what the script is in sport. It is always the same. It is confidence. It is positive fight. It is relaxation. It is fun. We know that that ideal performance state script is where we'll get the most out of the game, where our talent and skills will be born and will be launched into the highest possible orbit, and it also will be where we get the most satisfaction and enjoyment and fun from the sport. But doing that requires wonderful acting skills. Some of the most exciting research has been in understanding that the chemistry of faked emotion and real emotion in professional actors is indistinguishable. That in fact, when Julia Roberts really cries on screen, and we compare that to a genuine sadness, a genuine cry that is born out of a very natural, spontaneous response to a tragic event in her life, they are indistinguishable in terms of their impact on the physiology. That is why they are so believable on screen, because they are truly involved in summoning the chemistry that is associated with those emotions. You may not start out confident. You may feel no energy. You may feel like not being there. You may feel like not playing a particular person or this push or this in front of this audience or whatever. But if you take the same procedures and the same skills and the same directions that a great actor or actress does, and you accept responsibility for that as your task as a competitor, to create that special climate inside yourself. Now, how does Julia Roberts or Jack Nicholson do that? How do they summon those emotions? Well, they do exactly what Jimmy Connors does in the context of his competitive battles. Jimmy Connors has learned to be very, very careful in how he thinks. He thinks tough. And how he acts. He acts tough. And what does that mean? He acts the script out. He acts energy, positivism, fun, intensity, confidence, all the time. He rarely deviates from the script. There are so many bad actors in sport who are constantly deviating from the script. They're chastising themselves, they're belly aching, moaning, groaning. There's no place in the script whatsoever for that kind of emotional response. We have to practice the skills that an actor or actress has to practice. We have to learn how to bring confidence with the look in our face by moving the muscles of our face. Remember, those muscle cells in the face, by communicating a smile, we in a real sense communicate very powerfully to the physiology that it's okay, things are all right. This is not a place to be afraid or to be sad or to be angry. That in fact, we're moving the physiology at a molecular level. We know that autonomic nervous system responses mirror the movement of muscles in emotion-specific ways. When we take on the look of a frown, or take on the look of sadness, or take on the look of happiness, that in fact, just moving the facial muscles to coincide with the emotions we want to experience will help that along tremendously. If you ask Julia Roberts, I want you to carry a smile on your face, but I want you to cry tears of sadness, she absolutely could not do it because the body's communicating different messages. Now, if you want to communicate confidence and belief and positivism, and you're carrying your head and your shoulders down, your walk is slow and lazy and without any spirit, you cannot summon the chemistry within you for fighting, for being strong, for mobilizing all the resources that you have. That very simple understanding, the body is all connected. What's happening with the muscles of your face, with the muscles of your shoulders, are connected to what you're thinking And all of that is connected to what images you're carrying in your head. And all of that is connected to the physiology and to the emotion that you're carrying at every moment. The mind is the body. The body is the mind. And everything you do affects everything else. All the cells are connecting and communicating in a wonderfully interactive and brilliant, massive network of interresponses. It's important to understand also that emotions work very much like muscles do. If, for instance, you stimulate a particular muscle, you're constantly working a particular muscle. When you want to summon that muscle in the course of some activity, it's readily available to you. The same thing is true emotionally. If, for instance, I give you $10,000 and I say, I want you to cry in 3 minutes. If you can cry for me in 3 minutes, you will get $10,000. If you very rarely cry, the chance of you getting this emotion to surface, either in the form of joy or in the form of sadness, is nearly impossible. But people who can cry fairly easily, who have kind of worked the pathways that connect to that particular response, in other words, they're pretty honed in, that stimulation has occurred sufficiently often so that that chemistry behind that emotional response, that sadness, is available to you, you're more likely going to be able to cry and to get that 10,000. Now, what are some of the things that you would have to do to make that 10,000 come your way? Let's say that you're sitting there and you are going to try to make this happen. The first thing you're going to try to do is to make sure that your thoughts are consistent with the emotion that you're trying to achieve. In other words, let's say sadness. You're going to probably think about the saddest thing you've ever thought in your life. Maybe the most tragic thing that has happened or could ever happen to you. And we know that just thinking about that, really focusing on it, will start to change the chemistry of what's happening. Those neuropeptides will start to come alive. They will send through their secondary messenger channels a proliferation throughout the entire body, signaling this message of sadness chemically. We also know that if you gather an image, that you picture an image of this, and you kind of re-experience that image visually, and then you start to do that emotionally, the emotion will come even more powerfully. It's almost as if the brain cells, neurons, are unable to distinguish something that's vividly imagined from something that actually happened. So that chemistry just becomes as real as if it actually were happening right here and now. That's what happens to you when you go into a theater and you sit and you watch Jurassic Park. You know all the time you're sitting in that theater. You know for sure that you haven't gone into Jurassic Park and you're not really there. But the fear that comes inside of you is exactly the same fear if you were there. You know you're sitting in the theater. Why should you become afraid? Why does it work when you know logically that you're sitting there eating popcorn? Why should you become afraid? Well, it's because your central nervous system, the perceptual process, cannot distinguish real from unreal in that context. And so the real chemistry of fear is triggered. It's the same fear, exactly the same chemical profile that you would experience if you went into Jurassic Park and those events actually occurred to you. So what we are going to try to do here is to either think thoughts that help to summon those emotions or to make visualizations and images come alive to make that happen.
Fast forward to the end of this side. Turn to side two and press play.